Welcome to the May 4th, 2021 session of Tangerine SDR and HAMSAI technical session. My name is Dave, KV0S. This week, I've been doing a little bit of work on communication programs, a little bit of work on some visualization programs, but also getting ready for this class, forestry class that I'm teaching. So that's been most of my business this week. So next on the list, we have Nathaniel, W2NAF. Go ahead.
Thanks, Dave. Well, I've continued working with students this week, working on data analysis. I've been working with Veronica on doing some cross-correlation analysis for the GREEP system. I'm working with some students on SuperDarn data analysis. I'm working with Dev on his data analysis. So we're doing lots of data analysis. And as I said, we got those antennas up a little higher. I have a receiver guard now, so I'll be able to both transmit and run the receive stack. So W2NAF, back to net.
Very good. Next on the list, we have Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, fine, Dave. Good evening to you and good evening to the net. Been puttering a little bit here, discovered, or rather have started moving in the direction of preparing a Debian package to package the Tangerine localhost code into. And so it'll be possible to download and install just with a few commands. If I do everything right, with a package that should run either on the Pi or on an Odroid. So moving in the direction of that, I've set up all the security stuff, the necessary SSH keys and GPG stuff, and got an account in on that system. So going to be just working on that a little bit for the next few weeks. Also, I've discovered there's something funny that happens. I've been running the grape for extended periods of time, and I notice that once in a while it will crash. And I wonder if anybody has discovered that if there's any memory leaks somewhere in GNU Radio somewhere that you only run into when you run it for days at a time. If anybody has any comments on that, I'd be most interested. And oh, by the way, Nathaniel, I will not be able to make the Thursday telco with Case Western on account of I've got some travel coming up, so I'll be out of touch Tuesday through Thursday. So anyway, that's the news from here. AB4EJ, back to net.
Fine business. Next on the list, we have Dev, KC3PVE. Go ahead, Dev.
Hello, good evening, everyone. We are starting a good week here at the University of Scranton and in Scranton City. So I'm continuing to analyze data, modifying algorithm, and there are, as always, hiccups, and we try to overcome those hiccups. So I think I'm drinking a lot of water. Thank you.
Very good. Next on the list, we have Bill. Kelsey, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I don't have too much here. Got some work done on the club on the antennas that were on the ground. They're back in the air now. And the only other question I might have for the group, and I realize this is the wrong place, but does anybody know what the spot is that I get the list of parts that go on the Grape PC board? So I put together a Grape receiver. I've got three PC boards, but I haven't put anything together in it yet. So I would like to get started on that. But all the stuff on the website seems to, just at least I don't seem to be able to find it. It's probably still there, but I haven't looked in the right place. So I need a little hint to get me in the right direction. So that's about it from here.
I think it was a list of parts, a bomb on the DigiKey.
If I can get your email address, Bill, I can send you a document that'll have all that information.
Oh, okay. I'll send you out. Yep.
Or if it's on QRZ.com, I can get it off of there too, if your email's good there.
Just NADT at WOH.RR.com.
Okay, let me write that down.
Hey, Gary and Jim have been busy putting together better documentation, but it's just not, it's still in like a draft form. It's not totally posted on the site yet.
It's Gary? And that reminds me, I needed to put those two lists up on that website and I forgot it. That website is hemsci.org/grape1.
I'll put that in the chat.
I'll try to get that up tomorrow.
So Gary, do you need a repeat on his call sign or did you get, or his email?
Yeah, I think you have a repeat that would help again, Bill.
Yeah, November 8, Echo Tango at woh.rr.com.
Got it. Thank you.
Hey, Gary, would you CC me with that and just make sure that I've got the same one you're sending out?
Yeah, no problem, Jim.
So, Gary, thanks. Go ahead. Well, you got
okay. Thanks, Dave. Good evening, everyone. No updates for the group, though I do want to say, Nathaniel, I'm glad you're worried about protecting your receivers because I see an awful lot of skimmer spots from W2NAF, and I've been using them, and I'm sure a lot of other people are too. So keep up the good work. 73.
Very good. And next on the list is Bill in 8ET. Go ahead, Bill.
No, you just got me a minute ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I changed my name.
Your name and it moved. So we had Gary. All the names are moving around. Dave Whitten, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello. Not a lot of action here. I plug away at something or other every day. I'm not always sure what it was by the end of the day, but some working on some data presentation things and running magnetometers and trying to build some new ones. Other than that, that's it for me.
Well, fine business. And it looks like I jumped over Dan in for XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, thank you, Dave, and hello all. I had a little bit of an issue with my Odroid this week. The wall wart seems to have died. So I don't know exactly what the problem is. I didn't look at it real closely. I just noticed that it wasn't working. So I need to fix that. And got reinterested in magnetic loop antennas a little bit. Bought some parts for an antenna kit, and I'll have the chance to get that up and running hopefully in the next week or two. Anyway, that's about it from here. Back to you, Dave.
Fine business. I bought some parts for one of those, and I haven't put them together. So that's another one of those to be done projects.
Yes, I understand that full well.
Okay, next on the list is David, N1HAC. Go ahead, David.
Good evening, everyone. Everything I do is practically magnetic loops, from big little ones to big ones. And I've been doing a lot this week from also VLF to VHF. It might as well say DC to daylight. VLF receivers. And antennas, our AM Doppler, I've got a receiver down I have to debug, but we've been getting very good data on our Doppler shifts. If they leave the stations on the air, we had a long-term clear channel station on, what is it? WFME, used to be WQXR in New York, shut down. And that was primary station for us because it's at the high end of the band. We get better data at 1500 kilohertz than 800 kilohertz. But we think there's a Buffalo station we might be able to use. Got VHF repeater work that I'm taking care of around here, trying to expand our local VHF repeater network. But anyway, very busy. It's always something to do if you're involved with radio. So back to net.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Don, KI5KGX. Go ahead, Don.
Well, thank you, Dave. Good evening to the group. You know, my week or last couple weeks actually have been a what we call back to basics process. Since gathering great interest in HamSci, it's funny that you have to relearn things. So I've been hitting the books and looking at things like accuracy, resolution, precision, repeatability. I mean, that's fundamental to science. And this is all associated with me coming up to speed in frequency measurements. I bought some equipment and conducting some experiments, but also supporting it with that hard mathematics that, you know, you learned as an undergraduate is so difficult when you get years back and when you did the gray hair and it just makes it a lot, you know, and fast Fourier transform, sample rates and Bessel functions. I used to know how to do that by hand, but so that's what's taxing myself here at that, and I'll continue to learn and hopefully participate actively in some of the ongoing experiments. But I want to make sure that I've got a good set of knowledge and measurements here here in Spring, Texas. Back to the net, Dave. Thank you.
Fine business. I understand your challenge. The nice thing is, compared to our undergraduate years, there's a lot more a lot of nice computer programs to help you practice those things.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. Yes, I'm gathering all those computer programs and working through them and have a lot of fun with that. But you want to do some double checking finding some let's say anomalous things that are going on with those computer programs. So it's fun. It's enjoyable. Sorry, Dave, back to you.
Yep. Fine business. So next on the list, we had Gary. So James, KG4 DSG, go ahead.
Well, good evening to the net. Not a lot going on here. I've finally managed to get the time and the funds to research the blown up tower machine that died about 2 months ago. Turns out it was the main board. Processor, memory, disks are all fine. It's the one thing you wouldn't expect to go bad. But it's been replaced and it's back up, and I'll be able to get back into some software work. Back to the net.
Very good. And next on the list is Jim. I don't know if you already gave your comments, Jim, or do you want some more time?
Oh, I don't need time, but I'll take it. And I like to hear myself talk. Well, yeah, we, thanks to Nathaniel and Christina, we're able to get Gary's work up on the website, the help website, and I've forgotten to put those parts lists up, the one for DigiKey and then one to Amazon. Now we'll try to get those up early tomorrow. Then we'll see where we need to go from there. And I have gotten back to trying to set up my own grape, got the down converter board working, turned my attention to the Raspberry Pi. And as I think it was Don said, it's funny how just a few years it gets away from you. So I'm having to kind of reteach myself some of what I had learned before on that. I'll get there, and I need to check. I don't know if John's the only one who can tell me. Somebody on here can probably tell me. I need to make sure I'm pointed to the right set of software to download to run the Grape One on the Raspberry Pi, the latest and greatest. I need to make sure I've got the right one that I'm looking at. If somebody has that handy or otherwise, I will. I think I found it, but I'll continue to look. And let's see, that's about all I've gotten done.
Okay, well, next on the list, we have Joe, W7LUX. Go ahead, Joe.
Good evening, all. First of all, I've been helping a friend recover from hip surgery, so I haven't been very active here. But I have monitored the two Google, groups, let's see, https://groups.google.com. And the one that has that groups.google.com/g/ hamsci-grape has all of the parts needed for the DigiKey order, has sample data collected. It has just a lot of information I put up there for anybody who to look at, but I've seen virtually no activity on either that net or the helper group net. So I'm not sure just what's happening, but all that information is on that hamsci-grape information. I'm not sure about the source for the software or firmware. I do have that. I do have the firmware if somebody needs some guidance. W7LUX@ARRL.net will get you here. But as I say, I've seen no activity for several weeks on either one of those lists, Dave. Okay.
Okay. Well, there you go. So somebody needed that. Get a hold of Joe. And next on the list, we have Nathaniel KC3EEY. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
I think you mean Jonathan KC3.
I'm sorry. Jonathan KC3EEY. Jonathan, sorry.
That's okay. Hi, everybody. I don't have too much to report. I was still very busy working with my LaTeX project. I'm making some leeway, thankfully. And also one thing that I wanted to mention, I got a Pi Zero for the first time, and I didn't realize just how tiny that is. I mean, that is a very small board. So the ideas for BLF audio capture are coming in. That's all I have. Back to the net.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Jules K2KGJ. Go ahead, Jules. Well,
you're not getting.
I heard something.
Not getting any audio.
Oh, I even see his audio showing something, but his mic icon. Oh, well, we'll come back to you, Jules, if you can figure it out. And next on the list, we have Michael, AA8K. Go ahead, Michael.
Where'd everybody's audio go?
Don't hear him either.
I don't know either. Let's, so we don't have Michael. Are you guys still hearing me?
Yeah, you're fine.
Yep.
Okay. Let's try Scotty, WA2DFI. Can you?
Okay, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
It's a miracle.
Okay. Your office is getting more crowded.
Oh, it is. That's because I haven't turned the background on. Because I usually turn the background on to hide my terrible, messy office. So there you go.
Okay.
Now it doesn't look so bad, right? It looks more relaxing. I got to get my suit on so I can go for a swim. Anyway, this week has been a long, slow week. But by the way, Bill, I got your magnetometer shipped out. Unfortunately, it went out today, so it'll be a couple days before you see it. It went out first class, so you should see it in a couple days. And Jonathan, we ordered 10 codecs, TI codecs, the ones that are on back order, and they're on back order till like August. But we figured we got them in the queue anyway. So when they show up, and interestingly enough, one of the parts from Microchip that was due June 1st showed up today by FedEx. So I guess they really don't know when their parts are going to be shipped out because they just happen to show up at random times. At any rate, we're down to only two parts that we're having trouble with, and I've actually found a distributor that has them. If I can just wrangle a quote out of them, we might be in. Actually, I should say three parts. The FPGA, of course, is always the last one that I can possibly get, even though we knew what it was and all that. It's an industrial temperature range and a -6 speed grade, so it's kind of unusual. Anyway, so we're fighting down to the last three parts here, and we also ordered the parts for an evaluation board to emulate the clock module connections, the oscillator and the square and then it has outputs that go into the Scilabs evaluation board. So John will be able to actually do some measurements on the real actual chain of parts that we're going to use on the clock board. And he also has ordered, this is way over my head, he ordered a new piece of equipment to measure phase noise down to a much higher accuracy and higher frequency than he could before. Apparently it's some big high buck machine that he ordered. And so when he gets that, which I think he's supposed to get that on May 21st, he'll be able to test at our 122 megahertz frequency instead of having to mix it down to 30 megahertz and do the measurement there and kind of guess what it was at 122.88. So he'll be able to measure it directly. So anyway, that's about it from here. Just muddling on, trying to get the parts done. It seems like on my time logs, I have nothing that I accomplished, but yet I've been sitting at the desk all day. So
yes.
It's just like, what have I been doing here? Oh, that's right. I'm chasing parts down. That's right.
Well, that's important.
It's important, but it seems like a lack of accomplishment, but it's necessary. So
yes.
Anyway, back to you, Dave.
Fine business. Let me try Jules again. Jules, can you?
Yeah, how about this?
Oh, you're just fine now.
Okay, good. Sorry. Not a lot going on this week, mostly spring work around the house and garden, catching up on things there and up with the nice weather. A little bit of work on magnetometers. The rest of my spare time was spent working with a physics experiment I've been doing. It's related to what's called the Wheeler-Feynman absorber theory. Maybe I'll go into that sometime in the future. Other than that, that's about all from here. Back to net.
Fine business. And Michael, can you try yours? Michael, AAAK, if you're there. I don't see his mic going off. Well, we have Tom McDermott, N5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave, everybody. Been working this week on porting GR-HPSDR to the 3.9 version of GNU Radio. And so far, I've had to hand edit 16 files. I have two more to go. And then I'm expecting a very large software implosion when I try to do the build the first time. So I'm sure that'll be fairly ugly. And that's pretty much it.
I'm really glad you're doing this though, Tom. Appreciate it.
The automated tools automated everything except all the file changes.
Yes. Well, that's good. So I think I've gotten everybody on the list.
Hillman's there.
Oh, did Hillman come along? Hillman, KD2MCR. Go ahead, Hillman.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. I got here a little late. I haven't really done much on magnetometer project as the semester is nearing the end, and there are a lot of going on. Important workshop is going on, so. But I'm looking forward to hearing from all of you guys.
Fine business. So if that gets everybody.
Did you get James?
We did get James.
Okay.
Anybody else not have a chance? Okay. Well, we'll be open for general discussion. And if those people want to jump in, they can. So discussion.
I have run the Raspberry Pi for a couple of days and had no failures, no quits, no lockups here.
I have not had a problem with Raspberry Pis, but I have had a problem with red pitayas after a couple of days of running. They crash and then all I have to do is unplug it and plug it back in and it starts up again.
Okay, what is that?
I don't know if that was directed at me. The problem that I've been running into is only occurs when I'm running GNU Radio with a waterfall output. And I don't know whether the problem is with GNU Radio or with this particular great part that I have as far as the hardware. It's also the one that has the Adafruit GPS board on it. Don't know if it could be related to that. And another thing, it could be simply related to a problem with the micro SD chip. I know that I've had some micro SD chips that were flaky. So I'm gonna try and nail down, or rather eliminate, by process of elimination, figure out what's going on. I'll run it with just DRF output and no waterfall for a few days and see if it keeps running, and see what happens. So
well, I have a couple things. So first,
go ahead.
Jim, I put a link in the chat to the image that John Gibbons is distributing for the grape. So that's the official that he's using. And then Scotty, I got an invitation from Mike Hartje to talk about, I guess, the personal space weather system project at the SDRA. And I think he also was looking for a contribution about the Tangerine SDR project as well.
Okay, what did he send me an email? I don't remember. It's been so hectic around here. I seem to remember somebody putting in a request, but I didn't answer them. So when
I'll just forward this one to you.
Okay.
What's that?
When is it?
It is June 20. Let's see. It's with the GNU Radio Days from June 24th through 27th. SDRA.
Oh, yes, I did get an answer. Is Dev here? Dev is not here.
Dev just left. He's working on his paper.
Well, I think he was.
Okay, the SDRA is June 26th and 27th.
Is that's the Friedrich Schaffen SDR thing that they were going to put on? Or is that something different?
It would be late June.
It says
that's Friedrich Schaffen weekend, that June.
Yes.
Yeah, and I told
I guess.
Yeah, I told Dev I'm not available in person that weekend because it's field day weekend. And so I can't do anything.
Yeah. Now,
but I told them I would record something if they wanted to play it.
And this is Michael, who participated in the DCC last fall.
Right.
Michael.
And I think he also has a Whisper. I think he's also one of the ones with a Whisper node in Antarctica. That's going to be a busy week for me, because the week before June 26th and 27th is going to be, the CEDAR conference, which is the big NSF workshop, which is basically, that's the division that's funding this DAISY project. And so I've got two invited talks for that week too. Plus I've got students giving presentations, and Dev will be giving a presentation there. So it's going to be a very busy week for me.
So is Dev going to give a presentation at the that weekend, that June 27th weekend also?
I wasn't aware of it. I'll have to talk with him about that, and I'll have to think about that.
Yeah, I'm looking through my old emails and I don't see anything that... What's the name of the conference again?
I just emailed it to you.
Okay.
That takes it's the SDRA.
SDRA.
SDR Academy?
Software Defined Radio Academy, right?
Yeah. I guess SD Academy. Yeah.
SDRA sounds like some kind of solar activity. Okay. I think so. Let me see. DK5HH?
Yes.
Yeah.
DK5HH.
No joy from that end. So it's so much more fun looking through all of your megabytes of email. I do remember this, though. And I thought it was Dev that had asked me. And I said, no, I can't, but I'd record something. And because I think he said he was presenting too. Or maybe he just meant the HAMSCI group, which would be you, most likely.
Yeah, I can't remember. I'll have to talk to Dev. I might have told him to go present, have remembered.
Let's see. Yeah, I remember this email because of the practically unknown in Europe comment would be a nice thing to fix.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. This project is not well known in Europe, or not as well advertised.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth thinking that maybe the best way to get your project known is to keep it secret.
because people latch onto something if they think that they got that's not supposed to have, right? But if you try and broadcast it, you know, everybody's heard of that and they don't bother.
Yeah, we do a good job of ignoring what goes on in Europe, it seems like, a lot of the time.
I think we do a good job of keeping our project secret too, even though it's not intentional. Let's see.
Say, for those that are gluttons for punishment, I posted a link to a video on remote system updates on Max 10s. And Nathaniel, your student that's going to work on the FPGA should probably watch this video.
Yes. Yes.
It goes through how the different ways you can set up the a remote system update, which is essentially managing the flash memory and how you do it and how it's the whole procedure of where you put things and what are the choices. And it doesn't really get into the programming of the FPGA, but it's kind of the one step above architecture. And I think it's a useful tool for anybody that wants to help on the FPGA part of it. A good
lesson.
It's about an hour long.
Is this an Intel?
Okay. That sounds great.
It's an Intel video, and it's actually somebody that's fairly intelligible.
Some of them are they?
Some of their speakers are not very clear.
Can you send me that link too, Dave?
It's in the chat.
Oh,
it's in the chat.
I made it two messages. My Linux Zoom tends to make pasting hard.
So you found this was reasonably informative. Some of them are just really not useful.
This one is very informative for the purpose of what we have to do. And you'll get extra points if you watch it all the way to the end.
More points than I already have?
Gold star.
Yes. I'll double the points, Scotty.
Okay. And my pay too, right?
Yes.
Wow. I got to go now. I got to go watch this video.
There are some other videos, but so many of their videos are off topic or something that we have no interest in. And it's hard to find.
Well, what I find with a lot of them is that it's like, this is the obvious path that you take. So if you're having trouble with something, the videos don't help you at all because you already tried all those standard things that they've suggested and they didn't work. So now, I mean, you're just going to go through the video and it's going to tell you to do the same standard things that you already did. So it's not going to help you much.
Well, the one thing that this video does is it tells you the options for using the flash memory. And there's one where you just have to the toggle, and then there's this other one where there are actually three flash memories. One is bigger and one is smaller,
right?
And the smaller one is basically crash survival.
Well, the two smaller ones can be aggregated to do another image if you want.
Yeah, so it gives the idea how you have to do it, but there's still some things to learn.
But like
what they don't
tell you is that if you use the two images, you can't initialize RAM.
Right.
Because the RAM image is stored in one of those memories and then you use it for an image. Well, anytime they say ROM, that really means initialized RAM. So almost every kind of FIR filter there is uses ROM coefficients.
Right.
Unless you write your own and then load it externally, which is what we're going to do actually. Because we're going to use RAM for the coefficients, and we're going to have a routine, the state machine routine that goes and reads the coefficients out of our external memory, our external flash, and put it into the RAM cells.
Okay.
This is what the school of hard knocks I learned this way is the way you have to do it. Otherwise, you can't do FIR filters.
Well,
I have actually seen a methodology of building FIR filters without multipliers.
Right.
I don't know if have you.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was an article you gave me or it was.
It might have been.
It was a Streamlining DSP is where I got it out of. It's a book by the guy who wrote the Understanding DSP. I forget what his name is. I could probably look it up on Amazon here, put the link up. It's a very nice book. It's very expensive. It's about $85.
Is that what it isn't Leon, is it?
It's okay, now you're gonna make me look it up because I'm not but it's
Lion.
Yeah, Lion.
It is Lions, I think. And
so
it's very useful, I think.
Are you or Tom using like MATLAB for making filters?
Yeah, I use the Linux version. What's it called? I can never remember.
Oh, Octave?
Octave. I use Octave to calculate the coefficients.
Do you have some code for it?
It runs MATLAB code. So
it does run it.
I get the code out of the Altera tool, actually.
Yes.
It will generate a tool to run under MATLAB to generate the script, the coefficients, which is good because you have to correct for the CIC filters. If you're cascading a CIC filter, the CIC filter has a droop that you have to compensate for in the FIR filter. And the droop is dependent upon how many stages and the decimation rate in the CIC filter. So it's to a certain extent anyway. So you have to be able to compensate for that to get a flat passband.
Right.
And this the Quartus produces code that allows you to generate these coefficients that produce a upswing inside the passband. Right. And then you don't care outside the passband, it goes up, it drops off real fast outside of that. But you see that little hump there.
So in OpenHPSDR protocol 2, Phil was doing his filters in Excel. And then he found MATLAB and he was just absolutely thrilled how easy it was to make a filter.
And the cool thing about MATLAB is for students and nonprofits and non-professionals like us, I think it's a $50 license.
Yeah, it's a $50 student license. I know that. Yeah.
And if you're not doing it professionally, then you can do that. So unfortunately, I do it professionally, so I can't really do that.
You have to buy it.
I have to buy it. And it's like
$200. Octave.
I use Octave.
Yeah.
And there's no graphical front end on our Octave, is there, that available?
Not that I know of. That's the nice part of MATLAB.
Yeah, I just use the command line.
I mean, there's graphing tools, but it's not set up for looking at the filters.
And so that's the thing, is what you can do is you can tweak your code and then you can run it and look and see what the shape is. Did I get it flat in my passband or not? And if you didn't, then you can adjust it accordingly.
So Tom, do you use either MATLAB or Octave?
No, I haven't used either. I did it in Excel when I was doing filter coefficients for root race cosine filters. And there's an algorithm called the Parks-McClellan algorithm for synthesizing coefficients. And I just wrote that up in some language to do it. It's it doesn't suit all filter types, though. And I suspect MATLAB is by far the easiest way to do it.
Yeah,
I have noticed in OpenHPSDR that the there's about plus or minus a half dB ripple in the passband filters. So that's actually pretty good, considering all the decimation going on.
So Nathaniel, something you might want to do for students working on this is get them a student MATLAB license.
That's no trouble. We have some, we actually have some research MATLAB licenses going around.
Okay. But they could help us with building filters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the key things you have to do.
Are there Python tools too?
Not as good as these.
Go ahead, Tom.
There probably have to be. And the algorithms were originally written in Fortran. And so I suspect that they've been translated to Python. It's an interesting exercise for the students because finite precision, which you tend to have in a fixed point FPGA, quantizes the coefficients and causes unusual errors. And so you need your students to go in and take a look at quantization errors because it can have bigger effects than they might expect.
And I actually have a Python program
yeah.
we wrote that will graph the given the coefficients of a fur filter, it'll graph the response, but it doesn't generate coefficients.
Yeah, so a lot of the programs will do it with floating point math, but you tend not to have floating point inside an FPGA. No,
this is fixed point because it's designed to do what the FPGA does.
Okay, so the MATLAB tool actually generates fixed point coefficients?
It will do either.
Okay.
Although the interesting thing is I've actually set it to do floating point coefficients and I end up getting fixed point coefficients out. So I'm not really sure how you can make it work the way you want.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, you can use so what they do is the MATLAB script generates a fixed point and it generates a symmetrical filter, and then they take the middle coefficient and they make it 2^(n-1). So they normalize all the coefficients to that to get you the maximum possible range or resolution. Yeah. So I think that minimizes quantization errors.
I don't know. I don't know it. You can minimize the absolute value of the quantization and still have to do strange things to the filters. I've been playing all week with the GNU radio FFTs, and I found some errors in the amplitude response of those FFTs. The kind of error is called scalloping error, which as you change the window filter, the amplitude changes. But I'm getting on top of that about 3 or 4 dB error in GNU radio, in addition to the scalloping error. I haven't figured out what that is yet. So
is it a slope type of error, or is it a cyclical error?
No, what happens is a scalloping error is if you have a normal window in an FFT, a frequency that's exactly dead center in the FFT bin will have the highest amplitude. And if that frequency is just slightly off from the dead center of the bin, the amplitude starts decreasing. And it goes minimum when the frequency component's right at the edge of the FFT bin. There's a type of window called a flat top filter, which straightens that scallop out. And so the amplitude's the same everywhere. However, the GNU radio flat top filter is about 3 dB different than the peak amplitude of the normal filter. And I don't know I don't know where that error is coming from. So you have to be very careful with GNU radio if you're trying to do any kind of absolute amplitude measurements.
So it's kind of like there's a super peaking filter inside each bin?
Well, it's the product of the time domain window, which cleans off the phase discontinuities at the end, causes a variation in amplitude if your frequency is not dead center in the bin. The FFT will output your frequency as though it is dead center, right? You just have the FFT bin output. So you pretend that it's dead center, but if the frequency wasn't really, the amplitude starts to change. And that amplitude change is expected, but I found some unexpected amplitude changes on one or two of the GNU radio filters as well. So I'm putting together the July program for the GNU radio amateur radio meetup, and I'm going to go into the errors there and how you have to normalize the GNU radio filters.
So how much is the difference in amplitude between the center and the edge of the bin?
It depends on the kind of windowing filter that you have, but it's on the order of 2 or 3 dB.
Okay. But then you said there was another error that you found that's not—
Well, the flat top filter is like 3.5 dB down from the more common filters, and it's supposed to be 0 dB all the way across. And so I don't know where that 3.5 dB error is coming from. So I have at least 2 unexplained errors right now in FFT filter outputs.
So it sounds like they just take the minimum amplitude at the bin edges, and that's the amplitude you get?
No. I set up a simulation and fine-tune the frequency, and you can watch it scallop. It's got maximum amplitude in the center of the bin, and it rolls off one side, the other.
If you use the flat top window,
then the amplitude's constant all the way across.
Right, but it's not at the peak, it's at the lowest point, right? So it's like
it's something different than either of those.
Okay.
But I don't know why.
Well, it'd be a good challenge to ask people What do you think it is?
Yeah. So I suspect they may just not have normalized the coefficients in GNU Radio, in the MIR coefficients in the filter.
Interesting. Okay.
So other than your typing errors, are you reasonably happy with 3.9?
It runs. I found a couple little minors, but I got help on the mailing list. The problem is, it's just, there's just a lot of manual conversion effort, and I'm down to the two .cc files left to edit. I've got all the other header files edited and the YAML files edited. 3.9 added some YAML options that are not documented. So yeah. I'm trying to figure out what those mean. Yeah, the typical kind of stuff to go through and trying to port to a new package.
Yes.
So I'm just slugging my way through it. Hopefully we'll get there soon.
Yeah.
3.9 looks neat because they've added some more features to the instrumentation. And I find I use the GNU Radio instrumentation I use all the time. The scope and the spectrum analyzer and stuff. You know, it's so handy when you can just throw four of them onto a flow graph,
right,
look at four different things. It's really a super neat package.
Yep.
So one thing not really related to this program, but I finally got my 599 Labs TX500 SDR. It's been on order since November, and I finally got it.
Is that the Chinese one?
It's Russian.
Is that the?
It's the Russian one. It's the one that's made out of two pieces of machined aluminum that's only about that thick.
Right.
And supposedly like IPC, some level of waterproofness.
Have you turned it on?
You were pretty excited about it back in November.
Yeah, right? the excitement does dissipate over the months, I guess. But yeah, I did turn it on. I haven't made a QSO with it yet, but I listened to the Seventh Area QSO party, which was populated with lots of signals this weekend. And pretty interesting receiver, and it's kind of intuitive to operate, and a nice white backlit LCD display. And the weird thing is that all the IO is done with these pin connectors, and they've made them. They've got 2-pin, 3-pin, 4-pin, 6-pin. I mean, there's six connectors, three on each side of the radio, for things like audio out, like microphone in, like key in, like cat control, like, and they all have a different number of pins, so you can't plug the wrong one in, but they also are totally non-standard. So if you don't have the cables that came with the radio, you're kind of out of luck, because they're not so easy to get. And they're kind of, I want to say they're like a smaller version of the regular 8-pin mic plug that's like on an ICOM or a Yaesu, but a smaller diameter. So maybe a metric version, although that 8-pin one is probably metric already. So,
well, they might be standard in Russia. I mean, is it Russian made?
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to have all that stuff's going to be different.
Yeah. So, and the thing is, it has no built-in battery, no built-in ATU, it has no built-in speaker. So what they give you with it is a speaker mic. So that means even on when you're operating CW, you got to have a speaker mic, because that's the speaker, or you have to use their pigtail cord and plug in headphones, which you can do, but you have to have the adapter cord, because it's like a 4-pin connector or something that you don't have in your junk box.
It sounds like a rig that was probably developed for use by spies.
Oh, all right. So that means it has a GPS in it, and they're monitoring my transmissions, right? Let's see. I'll put this is really not kind of relevant to what we're doing, but it is an SDR. So it's called the Discovery TX500. See if I can actually get a picture that's bigger than a quarter inch. It doesn't want to make it any bigger. That's not very useful then. Oh, there we go. Okay. See if I can share my screen here. So there's the radio. So Bill, there's the connectors, these kind of military grade ones. And it is literally only 1 inch tall to the handles.
So Scotty, did they send you the other end of those connectors?
No, but they sent you all of the accessories that plug into the connectors. So you really, okay. Unless you lose something or break something.
Oh, okay. You know, so you have one on those accessories.
Yeah. And I guess they had a picture of what was all included, but and you can see what's the annotation here. Actually, if I select the right screen, I can do it. So you can kind of see.
It's not very big.
did it get any bigger?
No, but I mean, the radio itself. Oh, the radio isn't.
Yeah. But you can see here, this is the DCN, which is a 2-pin one. And then this is the remote data. And you get an IQ output. So you can actually feed a pan adapter. Ooh. But I don't know what kind of bandwidth you get on the pan adapter. And then the microphone speaker here is a 6-pin one. And then the CW key over here is, I believe it's probably it's the 3-pin one or the 4-pin one, because it's got an internal keyer also. And then cat control for computer is I believe it's a USB port. So you can plug it in here and it's got a USB-A that plugs into your computer, and then a BNC for the antenna. And on the back, which you can't see, there's contacts for a battery. They're going to have a snap-on battery that's about the same size as the radio. It's going to use 18650 lithium ion batteries.
What is the power output of the transmitter?
10 watts.
Wow. Okay. That thing probably gets pretty hot if you're.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is it's a clamshell of machined aluminum. So,
yeah.
But that'll just mean that the case will get real hot.
You're right. Right. Yeah. Well, if you need any additional connectors, let me know, because I got some Russian friends.
Okay.
Seriously. I mean, they can probably find them for you if you need.
Yeah. Because I'm thinking the thing that I would make would be a cat cable. Well, I already got one of those, so maybe a special key and mic, because I really want to use it with maybe a small amplified speaker. The rumor has it that it doesn't have quite enough audio out to run a full-size speaker, so you need an amplified speaker. It's designed for a speaker, mic, or headphones. But if you're going to operate Morse code, all you really need is some kind of audio output and then the key, and you run doesn't do full break-in very well, but it does semi-break-in, so you don't really need a PTT.
Really look like a fairly standard military connector. I use similar ones, but they're bayonet, but I know there is a screw version.
Yes.
But they're probably done to a metric thread or something.
Yeah, and this has the plastic seal in the back, so really these are sealed from the weather. I'm not sure I would exactly take the thing and dump it in a bucket of water to try it, but it's supposed to be, what do they say up here?
They look to me like they're MIL-C5019 connectors.
Okay, this is a pan adapter, 48 kilohertz wide. I don't see. That's the specification, two lines. That's great. And the price has been generally just going up. It started out at under €1,000, and that's why I bought mine from HRO. Because the price has gone up $150 since I bought mine. So I guess the wait was worth it. But they see if they got any more. If they show you all the connectors. But see, this is how it's made with the two aluminum CNC machined aluminum alloys bodies, body halves. I haven't taken it apart yet to see what's inside. And of course you say, well, what kind of ham is that? I mean, the first thing you do is take it apart, right? Inside of it. So yeah, so you see down here all this stuff, this is what comes with it. So it's got all the accessories that you really need, and I believe this is a the connector that goes into the mic. So if you
it says GX12 type.
GX12,
yeah, right there, additional connector.
That's a seven type. That's the 7-pin connector,
right? But wouldn't they all be
they're all
that series?
Yes, they're all the same diameter, same thread, everything, just different number of pins.
Okay, well, that sounds something standard.
Yeah, it's standard, but somewhere
it might be like a cell phone. In other words, once you take it apart, it's very difficult to get it back together again and have it work.
In other words, don't take it apart.
Well, I'd think long and hard about it, but
especially I don't think it'll be waterproof anymore after I take it apart and put it back together. Anyway, I know that my cell phone battery decided it was going to blow it out to double its width, its thickness. And so my phone just went like this and it spread apart. And so when it came time to put the new battery in, it was really easy because it was already half spread apart anyway. But once I put it back together, it did not look like it was going to be waterproof anymore after that. And I haven't tried it in the pool yet to see if it's waterproof, so I don't think I'll do that.
A quick search says the GX12 is actually aviation.
That makes sense.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's you can buy them on Amazon.
That's why Dan recognized them.
So then it's something I can buy readily?
Well, there's a GX12 four pin on Amazon. I didn't search any deeper.
Okay.
Yeah, it is something you can buy right away, and everybody makes them. The secret with connectors is finding out exactly what it is that you need and what the exact number is, because you can look at the same general style of connector, look at two different ones. They fit within the same spec, but they look totally different.
Well, they look the same, but don't plug together.
Well, it's actually, there is an aerospace standard, AS50151. Take a look at that one, and that should probably lead you in the right direction. They're called circular threaded electrical connectors with solder or removable crimp contacts, and they're available either as a screw down or a plug in.
You like a bayonet?
Well, no, yeah, they are. Although I don't think they actually have bayonet locking connectors in that particular type.
So you said it's an AS501. What was the
50151.
50151. That's why it didn't come up. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Historical issue 2004. Well, they got a June 2020 version of the spec, but.
Well, if you buy the spec, I think it's about $90.
Yeah. I just want the connectors. I don't want the specific. It's $85 for the connector, for the spec.
That's why they have the simple spec.
Yeah. If the spec is that much, think how expensive the connectors themselves must be.
Oh, yeah. So you buy another radio just to get the connectors.
Right? I used to sell connectors years ago. It's a crazy, crazy business.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 73. I need to go
also.
Okay.
Same here, guys.
So, Spark, call it a night. Spark Fun has the connectors. They're like $350 a piece.
Okay. My kind of price.
Oh, no. No. DigiKey has them from Spark Fun at $350. Oh,
okay. Not bad.
So if DigiKey has them, I guess they're standard.
DigiKey has about 12 million different parts. So,
yep.
At least they had until the parts shortages. 73, Bill.
73. We'll catch you
Jules.
Next week.
73.
I'm going to sign off here too.
I'm going to say 73. Is anyone sticking around?
Get away. I need to talk to you for a second.
Okay. Yeah, Nathaniel, if you'll let me stick around for a while.
I would be